Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi. Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi. A podcast in which three people who look exactly like us review audiobooks of a science fictional or fantastical or other nature. So today, what are we reading, Barry?
Something that fell into that quote, other nature.
Mm-hmm. Tell us of your other nature.
We read The Book of Strange New Things by Michelle Faber.
Could you give us a reading from the back of the book?
Absolutely. It begins with Peter, a devoted man of faith, as he's called to the mission of a lifetime, one that takes him galaxies away from his wife, Bee. Peter becomes immersed in the mysteries of an astonishing new environment, overseen by an enigmatic corporation known only as Yuzik. His work introduces him to a seemingly friendly native population struggling with a dangerous illness and hungry for Peter's teachings. His Bible is their, quote, book of strange new things. But Peter is rattled when Bee's letters from home become increasingly desperate. Typhoons and earthquakes are devastating whole countries and governments are crumbling. Bee's faith, once the guiding light of their lives, begins to falter.
All right. So, Kevin, why don't we start with you?
Yes.
Well, hi, how you doing?
Do you know why you're here today?
I'm not sure.
Okay. What did you think of this book?
Have you found Jesus yet?
What book? I don't think I read a book.
Oh, good. Barry.
Yes.
What did you think of this book you chose?
I'm just going to say that it wasn't one of my favorite books and probably will never be one of my favorite books.
What if it's your only book and you have to read it over and over again?
I mean, if you kind of divorce yourself from some of the weirdness of the book, I think it might be readable, but.
Wow.
I don't know about that.
All right. So I was thinking about it today, and I don't think this is a science fiction novel, which, to be fair, he's never claiming that it was a science fiction novel.
Correct.
I think it's a horror novel.
It's how awful one person can possibly be without actually trying.
Yeah, it's sort of this both emotional horror novel and also kind of a physical horror novel. I mean, there's all kinds of triggering stuff going on in this book. There's some cruelty to animals that is described in, I think, a bit too much detail. But I actually think it's very well written. It's just, I really didn't enjoy it because, well, first of all, a friend of ours lost his cat recently, and I would like to take a moment to salute a cat we have mentioned several times on this podcast already, Zeppo, who, Barry and I met.
Yes, and Zeppo was awesome.
Zeppo was an awesome cat, and unfortunately, he's no longer with us. And that, unfortunately, happened the same day that we read this book, where there's a description of cruelty to animals in it. So
yeah,
if that's one of your triggers, avoid this book. I think that our main character is not someone we're supposed to like. And if we were supposed to like them, then this book has problems. But he is one of those people that sort of has the right intentions towards things, but keeps on screwing up time after time. And you just can see exactly what he's going to do next. And it's like cringe horror. It's like a social horror novel.
Is it like watching a train wreck?
No, those are quick and exciting.
I would actually classify this book as something of a character development genre book to me.
Does he develop?
Well, he develops into something awful into something worse. I don't know.
He changes a little bit. He becomes like a tiny bit more self-aware sometimes.
Right.
Wow, I'm a jerk. I thought I wasn't anymore. Oh, well. Yeah, I don't know. It was not my book. There was one scene towards the end where some crazy guy says something that sort of was the only good scene in the book as far as I'm concerned. And
yeah,
it wasn't just that it was, the guy was like cringeworthy, that's a genre I really can't deal with, is things where you see something bad's going to happen and it happens and you anticipate it and then it does anyway. And you're just like, ah, so I didn't like that, but it was just, I don't know. It's like, it was on top of that, it was boring. So it was just not a book for me. I listened to it 3x speed and it still seemed bad. On top of that, there's these aliens that have kind of a lisp, and it was like,
I've got to say the reader did a very good job bringing them to life.
I'm going to have to give big props to the reader.
And it was, I think that was a combination of me listening to 3x speed, you know, made it a little bit more like quasi comedic at the same time with, so it just didn't really fit and I just wanted it to be over. And then,
well, speaking of wanting things to be over, let's move on to our discussion section.
Hooray for Heat Death.
We will return for We Are Sci-Fi.
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 And welcome back to our analysis section where we can spoil this book in any way that it is not already spoiled.
It's been left out too long on the counter.
Yes. So we, of course, have our pre-written discussion points. It is a small white gap on this piece of paper.
Much like our witty segue section.
Well, like I was saying, you know, I do have a favorite scene. It was my only non-horrible scene.
Yes, I think we all and may I think, share it.
Yes, I think you for sure at least do. It's when he meets, what was it, Tagliattini in the abandoned village, which I was a little unclear why it was actually abandoned. But
who I kept on calling Tagliatelle, which is a kind of pasta.
Well, does it taste different than other types of pasta?
Yes, because no. Anyway, that was really funny, the thing that I just said.
The surface area makes it taste different, Barry.
No, it doesn't.
Moving on. So, yes, describe this favorite scene, please.
I don't remember very much, except that the guy was sort of crazy, told him a lot of stuff that he was wondering about, and that was about what I remember.
Well, that's a laugh a minute.
I know. You might be able to fill in some details that I erased from my brain.
Our main character, Peter, winds up really, really drunk and is trying to, or was he dying? I think he was dying and or drunk.
He was a recovering alcoholic, so I can't remember.
Oh, that's right. He wasn't drunk. Yeah, he had gotten bitten by something and he wound up thinking that he had been poisoned because this thing bit him and he was starting to get delirious.
It's like some sort of like carnivorous duck or something, right?
Right. I mean, it was something that was like really, really cute. And so it was the opposite of the usual. I mean, the thing happened, which was the inversion of the usual sci-fi trope where normally, you know, something terrible comes along and then the colonists kill it. And it turns out that that was absolutely necessary to the environment. Whereas in this case, this thing comes along and everybody thinks it's absolutely adorable. And so they're just like, okay, on your way, cute little things. And then there's like these horrible pests that destroy the crop and kill several people.
I was kind of wondering if some of the colonists might have, you know, thought to themselves, hey, look, it's dinner.
Yeah, they said something about, you know, I wonder if they're tasty. And just like, how dare you think about eating something so cute?
Yeah.
But, you know, then one of them bit Peter, our more or less protagonist.
I don't think there was a protagonist in this book.
Mm-hmm.
We can turn it to the mall protagonist for the more or less protagonist.
Okay, yeah, sure, absolutely.
Or maltagonist.
So anyway, Peter gets bitten and is convinced that he's dying because as soon as he gets bitten, then one of the aliens, whoever they are, they're not the aliens, it's their planet, but whatever right. The hell.
There was a name, but I can't remember anymore.
They gave them several names, but I don't remember exactly what they were. But anyway, one of them says, you know, oh, you will die now because he gets bitten. And he doesn't yet understand that these guys basically have no immune system.
Right.
Well, it's not so much that they don't have an immune system. It's just that they don't heal from wounds.
Right.
Yeah, that was like the full twist of the book.
Which is why they thought that, you know, this Jesus story was so compelling to them.
Right. Yes. That seemed to be like that was kind of a letdown. Was like that was the whole point of the book. Was like, you know, he comes here and normally missionaries, as they say, are like, you know, tortured, killed and shunned and so forth. And not very many people want to get converted. And he shows up and they're like, oh, are you the missionary? You know, we love Jesus, you know, and everyone, all the converted aliens are named themselves Jesus Lover 1, Jesus Lover 2, Jesus Lover 3, which was sort of comedic and like, huh? It felt like a Monty Python skit or something.
Yeah, for
or
about Twitter. About the first 10 minutes, I was kind of amused by that. And then I kind of got a little old.
And he's just like, this is great. I don't even have to do anything. They're just coming, he's been begging to, you know, get the gospel and everything. And he's just, you know, obsessed with that. And finally at the end, we kind of find out, oh, someone like, you know, gets hit by something like a pain that falls and like, oh, that's basically like crippled them for life.
Right.
And
even though it was a very minor wound and it was sort of described in the beginning as, oh, you know, it was a really minor incident. You know, we were worried at first and it was wonderful how caring they were.
Right.
You know, because, because this painting falls and everybody gives her hugs and is really supportive, and they don't understand that basically they're saying goodbye, because right. anything that, you know, no matter how minor that happens to these people, kills them slowly and painfully.
Right. And this kind of might explain why they, you know, when they're talking about the construction elements of their town, all the bricks are rounded corners and stuff right. like that. There's nothing sharp yeah, right. to run into.
And he had to bind his own Bibles with yarn because they called staples, you know, the hidden teeth that bite, I think it was.
Something like that. Yeah, they wouldn't put the spire on the church. They kept kind of, you know, right. going, we'll get to that later, maybe.
Anything sharp was verboten in that society. We should talk a little bit about, is this remotely plausible? But
yeah, that kind of bothered me too.
But yeah, at least it was a decent enough conceit. I think it could have worked as a short story.
Right. And so it's just sort of like at the end, you know, you're like, oh, and they don't ever come out and say it in the book, but you're like, okay, a culture or a species who can't heal would,
I guess we're talking about it now,
likely be fascinated by, you know, a story of someone who could, you know, heal people and is resurrected after they died. It's like, right. oh, and you'll live forever. It's like, this sounds awesome. I'm converting immediately.
Well, yeah. And then the other thing is that their language had nothing in the way of metaphor or, you know, they never lied. They were absolutely straightforward. And actually, I thought that was sort of an interesting thing. They almost don't have like a cultural immune system either.
Right. So they just sort of believe that anything written down, oh, this actually happened this way exactly. This wasn't like, you know, there's no such thing as an allegory or whatever. Like,
so it's basically an entire planet full of people like Drax from whatever the hell that movie was. They're all literalists, and so they just don't understand.
Exactly. So,
or they understand too well. Maybe that's the other half of the problem.
But I mean, in such a culture, you can't really give them religion and rely on whether or not they can accept it or not, because they don't have any defenses against something that might be metaphorical or might not be true.
Or an excessively sarcastic person showing up on their planet.
Right. We would wipe them out within minutes. Oh, yeah, I'm really happy to be here.
I bet you I could do it in the first 30 seconds.
No, these staples won't hurt you at all.
This is what we call a staple gun.
This is what we call ear piercing. Don't worry, it will be just fine.
You don't have to use it on just your ears either.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I guess, but we were trying to talk about our favorite scene, which is basically the guy... Peter gets delirious, drives out to, he's trying to drive out to their colony to, you know, get what he thought was the antidote to the poison. Turned out like he was just dehydrated and feverish, and there wasn't anything really wrong with him.
Like the doctor had basically like loaded him up on, you know, painkillers or something, and
right.
I think he was just sort of out of it. And
right, but he was convinced that he was dying of the poison, which there wasn't any. And he was driving out to the village for a cure. And I thought that was sort of a neat anti-trope, because that's the normal thing is just like, oh, we need to find the wisdom of these tribal people.
Right. They'll have some sort of magic herb, you know,
right.
that'll save me.
And instead, no, he had just misunderstood, because the slightest wound kills these people. So he wasn't actually dying. So then he accidentally winds up in their old colony. They had moved at one point, probably for safety reasons. And so he finds the linguist that had first learned their language.
Right, which he had, you know, only sort of heard of in, you know, passing before, right? He never had, he actually thought he had left the planet.
And this is like the exact opposite of this guy, because he's funny, he's sarcastic. This is Tattaglione. You know, he basically, you know, rips Peter a new one and gets him to drink, which, of course... In a normal novel, this would be like a horrifying low point, but because, you know, Peter is a recovered alcoholic and straight edger and so forth, but this was kind of a high point of the novel.
And yet his life doesn't seem to have actually gotten any better after he got sober.
Well, that's sort of the thing. So, you know, Peter didn't necessarily so much recover from his addiction as switch addictions. And so he had his support system at home, which was his wife. And
I don't think he was able to make her happy either.
Well, he could only really function, you know, while working with her, and basically could only get emotional cues directly. And so, you know, like
so being sent to another planet to basically bring God to other people.
Right.
Really and wasn't so his forte.
Exactly. He can only email back and forth with her. They had, for some reason, decided that she wasn't suitable for going. I'm not sure how much to read into that, or if he was just cannon fodder and they thought she was more useful here.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand, you know, why they thought that Peter was suitable to go to this planet when, you know, clearly he's like fairly defective on his own.
The other thing that was sort of interesting was, as far as we could tell, the corporation that was behind this thing didn't have an evil plan. They were more or less benevolent, and they were just saying, you know, let's not screw this up with the natives. You know, we kind of, you know, we need them. They make our food for us.
Well, I mean, they kind of had the standard evil plan for this genre of space exploration for profit, right? Which is they're basically going to only bring a certain number of people from Earth, and they're going to pay through the nose to get to this planet and then have to subsist off of, you know, eating the vegetables that the, you know, fetus face people.
Right.
You know, grew,
as they were described. Or, yeah. I thought their face looked like entrails. Like, just like, yeah. Yeah. But that was the other thing that sort of seemed jarring to me for some reason is, you know, he leaves Earth and we get the idea that the Earth is not in the best shape. But then, like, after he leaves, there's like this huge series of like tornadoes, tidal waves, and like just,
you know,
earthquakes and stuff going on. And you're like, what is going on? You know, his wife keeps sending him messages about how all this bad environmental stuff's happening all over the world. And I'm thinking, like, was he just like oblivious to it before he left and he didn't notice it?
I got that impression.
Because, yeah, maybe that's what was happening, just because it's from his point of view, it wasn't really conveyed that was happening before. And
so why is it that B doesn't notice this stuff happening before he leaves? And I wonder if they're just like kind of blinding one another to, you know, what's really going on in the world.
Or it could be that, you know, I mean, the storms and so forth can be global warming accelerating. I don't know about the earthquakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still like my false conclusion better, where halfway through the book I was going, why is it that all this stuff is happening suddenly? And I'm like, oh, there's some weird thing happening where it'll turn out that, you know, God exists. He's sort of like dropping his attention from Earth and like putting on his new planet that, you know, his new missionary is at. So now all this bad stuff is happening on Earth.
Right.
Actually, about halfway through the book, I was actually thinking of, you know, quote, why does God need a starship?
Yeah, exactly. yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Let's see. Yeah. So I wasn't sure how plausible I found these people because, as we mentioned, the slightest cut kills them. It's hard to imagine this kind of thing evolving.
Yeah. How did they achieve sentience when, you know, the marauding, you know, carnivorous ducks might have just eaten them in their, you know,
right,
genetic infancy?
I thought that's, you know, unless the whole point was, oh no, God does exist and he made them.
I mean, yeah.
Wasn't the planet called like paradise or something that, or by earthlings? I don't remember.
Yeah. We read this a little while ago and we haven't been really eager to reread it.
But I thought it was something along those lines where, but anyway, yeah. Unless that was supposed to be the point that, oh no, they were just made. Maybe they were just, you know, first draft for Earth or something.
Right.
But yeah, I was thinking the same thing where I'm like, I don't see how this people could have evolved without being able to heal. It just seems like they wouldn't have gotten this far.
I mean, you know, like I said in the early review section, I actually think it was really well written. I think it's got a lot of sort of interesting things going on in it. I just did not enjoy reading it. Until Tattaglione shows up, there is just no fun in the book whatsoever. And I mean, this comes off of two of the most fun books we've read in a while, so it's hardly fair in some ways.
It's like a big letdown.
Yeah. So that was my biggest issue was most of the book, it's just, you know, watching this guy screw up. And, you know, I didn't like him. And,
I mean, in retrospect, it kind of felt like, you know, part of it is because he's a recovering addict and stuff. I'm like, hey, it's like train spotting in space or something.
He's going to have to crawl out of the toilet.
Or he's just sort of like, I'm recovering and I can in this certain situation, but, you know, in this situation, not helping.
and, you know, actually there was one scene that I really did like, even though it was sort of like this is what this conversation is like from the other side, which was he's in an airport with his wife, and they're having a conversation with this sort of described in kind of nasty terms, this sort of, you know, boring couple, you know, they're trying to have this really enlightening conversation with them. And they're sort of, you know, gearing up for that moment in which they mention Jesus. And it's just like, is that what that conversation is like from the other side?
You mean from the converter side?
Yeah, exactly. Cause I've been on the other end of that kind of conversation a few times. And
Stephen, have you found Jesus?
Yeah, but then I lost him again. I mean, misplaced. He's in the house somewhere. You've seen my house. It's a mess. Anyway, yeah.
Anyway, there was misplaced body bags. What?
Yeah, exactly. So
I found him on a piece of jerky.
Leave your jerky out of this. Yes, was there tea? Yes, we don't really care.
It's England. There was tea, but not much because there were shortages.
What character would you want to be, and or who would you be? I would want to be one of the aliens so that I could die quickly.
You don't want to be Tattaglione.
Tattaglione would be fine. He's kind of similar.
I don't know. I could stay on Earth because at the end it turns into this post-nuke wasteland with, like, you know, his wife has to, like, flee her house into, like, a roving band of survivors.
See, the entire novel would have been fine if there had just been, like, this thing where, and I looked out the window and there was this guy waving this banner that said, yay, zombies, and post-nuke, yeah.
Yeah, then there's a whole thing with Granger, that woman who's sort of like his contact up on the alien world.
Oh, yeah.
His driver.
Right.
Yeah. And it just kind of like it, you know, he's thinking how, you know, how much he loves his wife. And she seems to sort of like kind of have something for him.
So that is entirely through his eyes.
Yeah. And so you're kind of like, it's hard to tell whether that's really the case.
I don't think it's actually entirely through his eyes. There is that one scene where she's talking to him and she's having him describe their wedding. Mm-hmm. You know, B and Peter, but you know, you'd sort of get the idea that she's sort of like mentally like getting off on the whole experience, like, you know, by, you know, just hearing the, you know, the description of B's wedding dress and how, you know, she would continue to wear the dress, you know, as, cause it wasn't really like a formal, you know, wedding gown. It was a sort of like a, you know, a nice dress. It was just like a really weird,
I trust Peter's viewpoint on this. Personally, I think that she's trying to remind him that he's married and trying to sort of recenter him on his wife. And he's just like, oh, she's into me, man. She's so into me. I've got to resist because I'm a good Christian man, but she is so into me.
Yeah. And then that point towards the end where he was basically going to come on to her. And the only reason he didn't was because she kept saying, oh, by the way, you're married, right? Like, you know,
exactly.
And I'm like, wow, he is a great missionary.
Yeah. What was it? He was thinking that today was going to be the day that she was going to convert to become a Christian. And he was just, you know, frustrated about the whole thing. He's just like, oh God, I don't know if I can deal with it today.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've all received enough minor wounds during the recording of this podcast to kill us all. So it's probably time for us to move on.
Give me some of that Jesus flesh and Jesus blood.
Jesus.
Yeah. I don't have a response to any of that.
That's my new ringtone.
I'm just searing the room.
We shall return probably, for we are sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Sci-fi.